Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, Michelle Garrett, Bendy Stitchy Designs. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Gary. Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you with us. It's great, and going to be fun. Fire Poppies is sponsoring this show, and we're always glad to have the Fire Poppies with us, all of them, all the poppies. And a couple of things for Fire Poppies. They are set up for you to get automatic delivery of the new series from Hands on Design, the Secret Santa series, the new series from Heart in Hand, which is the Christmas Square Dance series. I'll be able to talk soon. I just know I will. And and Amy Brucken Designs 365 Days of Warm Woolly Welcomes. So those series are available. Amy starts in June, so you can get ahead of the curve on that. But you just call Fire Poppies and give them your shipping and payment information, and that'll put you on the list so that you get the automatic shipments as the months go by here. And so for all you collectors, boy, that's sign up. Then you just they just show up. Mm-hmm. Fun in the mail, we call that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Happy mail. You forget you ordered it, right? And then it shows up because Fire Poppies doesn't forget.
No, exactly. No. Right. And then the cool thing about Fire Poppies is they are now the U.S. distributor for Lowry Stands. So if you're looking for a Lowry Stand or an accessory to go with the one you already have, Fire Poppies can do that for you if you're in the U.S. And, every time I order overseas, my first thought is, oh, long shipping periods or ordering issues or whatever. Nope, all taken care of. Just call Fire Poppies, order up a stand, and you're in business. So firepoppies.com, Susan Winter there will help you out. Do you use a stand? You don't use a stand. You stitch in hand most of the time, right?
I'm a stitching heathen, Gary. I'll stitch on a stand. I'll stitch in hand. I'll stitch... anything.
Stitching heathen. There's a marketing term.
Right? I won't patent that. Use it if you want. It's free. I just picked up a stand, like a table stand at the thrift store. But now I'm thinking like, oh, if I can get a Lowry stand domestically, maybe I need to hit Susan up for a Lowry stand.
Yeah. See, I can't. I got to have somebody holding my stuff. I got to have a stand of some kind. Because I've seen you stitch in hand there, and I just can't see that. I can't do that.
Not the kind of stuff that you do, right? Not the giant, big stuff, but little stuff. Like, I got to be able to stitch anywhere. I got to be able to just pull out my stitching and go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I guess for me, that's true. If I'm stitching, it's in a hotel room or it's at home. So I have that luxury of being able to set up and not have that. So because you have a lunchtime project at work, so you need to just sit in a chair somewhere and stitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And like when we go up to Acorns for First Thursday, Acorns and Threads, sometimes it's so packed in there that there's not enough chairs, literally not enough chairs for the people. So I just stand and stitch, and there we go, stitch in hand.
I admire that. I can't do that. I just can't. Yeah. How do you keep the tension? Is that just over time your hand stretches the fabric enough that keeping tension is not a problem?
I think, I use needle minders to roll up my excess, and then I notice that I put tension using my thumb and forefingers on it, and I notice that because after an hour or two, my hand is tired.
Yeah.
So it's not an all-day thing that I can do, because I do have to put a lot of tension with my hand, but I think I've actually built up some hand muscles.
Well, I have no doubt.
Doing it. So, we adapt. We adapt.
Yeah, no, I have no doubt that you have some strength there. Yep. I'll stick with my stands. Thank you very much. Yep.
Yeah, no, it's much more efficient and ergonomic to use the stand.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's something I keep wanting to find somebody to do an ergonomic show, because, I think we need to pay more attention to our ergonomics. I know I get in bad posture stitching and stand up and go, whoa, I should have been sitting some different way. Yeah.
I'm the same. Like I'll stand up or I'll look up because my kid talked to me and my neck, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm, now that you said Lowry stand domestic, I'm thinking like, oh, my posture could be beautiful.
Right.
If I just invest in my, it's an investment in yourself, right? To stitch on the stand, you extend the length of your stitching over years if your posture is good. And
I sometimes think I should get a big strap and strap myself to the back of the chair just so I sit up straight. Because, you know, over time you keep hunching over more and more.
You know, the light fades. You're stitching during the day. The light fades. You got to get your face just a little closer to the stitching. And
Next thing you know, backache. Yeah. Yay.
Well, then it's time for, you know, an Advil and go to sleep. So.
Yep. That's right. Yep. So when did you learn to stitch? Where did you learn?
So my grandma, my dad's mom, and she was multi craft jewel before that was a term. You know, she was a stitcher, and she was a beautiful needle pointer. She crocheted, she quilted, everything. She made clothes. But she taught me on pillowcases, those stamped pillowcases in the 80s with like birds and hearts and, stamped pillowcases. And for some reason, I remember it being variegated thread when I was 6 years old, but it was bound up like a DMC. So I don't know what brand it was.
Some off brand that's barely has,
you know, grandma was spending 5 cents a skein on my floss cause she had needlepoint to do, you know? So, it was in hand. We didn't have a hoop or anything. She didn't give me a hoop. She just gave me the pillowcase and said, here, but I would stitch on my pillowcases and follow the lines, and she would stitch on her needlepoint, and I would drool, and she wouldn't let me touch it, and it's probably all for the best.
Yeah, yeah. And so that stuck with you then?
Yeah, the stitching. I mean, you know, I put it down when I was a kid because you mostly just want to go play outside.
Right.
But then in middle school, 7th grade-ish, I took a home ec class, and we did cross stitch. We had cross stitch. Our options were cross stitch or hand stitch and apron. So I chose cross stitch. And I did a little race car, 3 colors. My dad still has it. It's like a 23-year-old race car now or something like that.
But Michelle made this.
I mean, you know, dads and daughters, right?
Yeah,
so
he
kept it. He has it. He shows it to me once in a while. And I'm like, Dad, I could stitch you something new and better. And he's like, no, I like this race car. Okay, Dad.
Yeah, you look at it and cringe. Yeah,
I do. I mean, it's not for like 13 years old and not really know what my exes are all crossed the same way.
Well, hey.
So, hey, that's my standards are very low, Gary. I just, you know.
Well, exes all crossed the right way. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty good right there.
It's kind of a big deal for one of your first projects.
Yeah, so yeah.
I'll take that as a win.
So then, because I'm always curious about that, because see, I didn't start stitching till I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
That girlfriend who taught me needlepoint.
That's so cool.
So that was my first exposure, but I had a grandma who sewed and crocheted and my mother sewed and knitted, but I, you know, it was of no interest. So I'm always curious. So did you keep that up then after 7th grade, right through college, or do you have the usual breaks there?
Nope. I have the usual breaks. So not at all during high school. Cause you know, I was busy, I guess. I thought I was busy. I was doing sports and hanging out with friends. And then in college, I don't know what it was. I think I was just at a craft store, like a Michael's or a Joann's, and their dimensions kits were there.
The ever-present dimension kit.
the ubiquitous dimensions kit. And I was training in martial arts at the time, so I was really into Japanese culture. And there was this dimensions kit with these two beautiful geisha on it.
Mm.
And I thought like, I know how to do this. I can cross stitch. And then I got it home and there were those, you know, the giant hanks of unseparated DMC and like, and I was like, but you know, and this is just my personality. Like, well, and back then I was so college poor. I spent money on this.
Right.
I'm stitching this thing. So I didn't know what I was doing, but I was like, well, we'll figure it out or we won't. And then, it took me like 18 months to stitch those geishas. They were big though. They were like, I don't know. The finished product was like 18 inches tall and 9 inches wide. They were big.
Yeah.
And I sold that. To my everlasting regret, I sold that piece on eBay for $83.
No.
So that I could buy another kit. And I want it back so badly.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I bought another kit, so.
But you got $83 for it? Well, that's impressive.
I mean, I thought so at the time, and now, like, looking back and my stitching that I do now, I'm like, I would never take $83 for this.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you said, like, you can't afford it. You know?
Right.
It's, yeah. But oh, yeah. At the time, who knew?
Yeah, but that's pretty good. I mean, that's a lot of money for a dimensions kit, and yeah.
I mean, it more than paid for my kit. It bought me my next kit, and I think I went out to dinner, you know? So hey. I was in college. That's
like a triple victory there.
It was fantastic. I was stoked. Yeah. My husband still teases me about that piece because he really liked it. So
you both would like to have it back. Okay.
I don't know if he would like to have it back so much for the aesthetics of it as for the story behind it and how he could poke fun at me every time he saw it.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever kind of enjoyment you get out of needle
point, right? Yeah. No, I'll never forget that. I was on a flight home from Germany. And I'm stitching on a Debbie Rowley thing, and flight attendant comes up. Oh, that's amazing. Do you sell those? And yeah, no.
Because
you have no idea how many hours are into this already, and I'm only a third done. Yeah, no.
Right. And you know, she was admiring the aesthetic qualities of it. But, like, if you don't know the work that goes into it, like you said, you could quote somebody a fair price, fair to us as needleworkers, and completely offend them.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know, like, they would be, I feel like people would be so offended by a fair quote. And that's just because it's, you know, the handwork and blood, sweat, and sometimes tears.
Yeah, exactly.
That go into it.
Yeah, and there's no way to convey to them what goes into it. I remember giving a gift to someone one time. First question, how long did it take you? Mm-hmm. That's really not relevant, you know?
Yeah.
It just.
And I mean, even the smallest piece, you know, I just finished Ginny McGowan's Blue Flower, her freebie from Market.
Uh-huh.
And it's like 55 by 55. But there's lots of beautiful color changes. And, you know, I had to dig out some DMC that I couldn't find. And it took me days. What are days of my life worth?
Right. You just, people who don't do it and have never done it just can't relate.
You can't
sell it.
But at least, you know, it feels good to be asked that, I'm sure, right? Like, do you do commissions? Meaning your work is good enough, I would want it hanging in my home.
Yeah.
That's a compliment.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think about
you're
it
like,
that
no,
way.
You're like, no, you know. Don't ask me to commission.
Right. Yeah. See, I don't know that I could do that.
You've never done a commission?
Yeah. Cause some people do commissions and, you know, talk about it. I'm not sure. I just don't know that I'd care to do that pressure, you know?
It was, you know, I've done one in my life, one commission, and it was recently. And, someone had asked me to combine to two charts and then modify it to their whatever. And it was pressure. Like I felt like every moment I wasn't stitching on that piece, I was cheating the person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it made me not want to stitch.
Right.
So then I learned it was beautiful when it was done and she was super happy with it. But, I don't think I would ever do that again. It wasn't a fun experience, and I'm here for the joy, right? Of needlework. So
yeah, it does. It sucks the life right out of it.
It does. Yeah. It makes it a job, and you don't want it to be a job.
No.
I have a job.
Yeah, I was going to say, got enough jobs. Don't you know?
I have plenty of jobs. I don't want another one.
Yeah, no, that doesn't interest me. And the last time when I my son's stocking. Which was one of those massive cross stitch things. And I got that done, but it was that kind of pressure and it just, and you don't want to do it. You don't want to pick it up. And finally it was, all right, you know, cause some 28 years had gone by, you know, every Christmas is Kevin's stocking going to be done.
Right.
All right. This is getting done and off my back, you know? And so I just sucked it up and pounded my way through it and got it done. And it's beautiful. And, you know, he's really proud of it and all those, you know, all the good things that come out of it. But when I put that last stitch in, I said, I will never do this again, ever.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like you grit your teeth and you finish it. I call that rage finishing, by the way.
Yeah, there it is, right. Yeah, there it is.
You're just like, I got to get this thing done. And then I find myself like, and you probably did too, thinking of any excuse. Like, maybe I could go to the gym today.
Right.
I haven't gone to the gym in 5 years. Maybe I could go to the gym instead of finishing this. Yep. No, just sit down and finish it. So yeah, it's, yeah. But the, I mean, I'm sure the stocking is amazing though. Like,
well, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it.
The joy that he felt, right? Yeah. Like, and seeing him show it off and be proud of it, that's gotta be its own reward right there.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. But oh,
just the process.
Rage finishing. I'm writing that down. There we go.
It's a good one. Yeah. It's a good one.
Rage. Cause that's literally what it was. All right. I had enough of this thing.
It is. That's what it is. Just I've only felt that a couple of times, but like, and you shouldn't be mad. And you're sitting there, you're going, why am I mad at my needlework? I should not be mad at this, but I'm mad at this right now.
Yep. That's exactly what I was. And I'm getting to the bottom of this toll if it kills me.
That's right. And it may.
And
it,
yeah.
It didn't. We're fine.
Came you're close. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got the dimensions kit, and then how do we move on from there? You grew up in Michigan, which I grew up. Where were you in Michigan?
I'm just outside of Ann Arbor, a little town called Saline.
Oh, I know the town. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you?
Yeah, and go blue, by the way.
Yes, go blue.
Born in Flint, grew up in Clio. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, I know both of them. That's funny, Clio. I don't think. I went to college with a girl from Clio, and that's the only person I've ever met. It's a small town, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Small town. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Small town.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad lives in Davison, and one sister in Algonac, and the other in Washington Township. So, yeah, they're still all there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family, too. They can't leave.
It's a nice state. It really is.
It's beautiful. Up north, like the UP. And
oh, talk to me. Talk to me.
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to take my kid back and go camping in the UP. And, oh, man, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, you do not even have to twist my arm to get me to go to the UP. That's beautiful.
Nope. 12-hour drive, done. I'm there.
Yep, exactly.
No big deal.
Yep.
No big deal.
Yep. So you continue to stitch after the geishas. Is it always cross stitch?
It's mostly always been cross stitch. I got into, so after the geishas, I continued to stitch. I actually bought.
It's like BG and AG. So before geisha, after geisha.
It is. As a after in the after geisha era, the next thing I bought was, I picked up Teresa Wentzler's Celestial Dragon. And it was a leaflet, and I got it at Joann's, and I didn't open it up. I just bought it because the cover was so beautiful. That thing is stunningly beautiful. And that was in 2006. And when I got home from Joann's, I remember opening it up, and I looked at the floss list and the Krynex and the blends in that thing. There must be 25 blends. In that, I exaggerate, but there's a fair, and I closed it and I put it away and I didn't start stitching on that until 2013. I had that for 7 years before I finally kitted it up.
I'm scared.
So it was strictly, but she's hanging in my hallway now. She's beautiful. She's a masterpiece. But it was 7 years before I picked that up, and I kitted it up after we moved to Hawaii. And there's a needlework shop in Hawaii. I kitted her up there and I stitched her while we were there, but I was really a monogamous stitcher until about 2016 when I discovered floss tube.
Yeah.
And then it all amped up. It just went off the wall. I got crazy.
Yeah. Well, that was floss tube, a real turning point for a lot of people, but I've always had a sense that for you, it was a big trigger.
It was huge. I was stitching. I was, like I said, I was a monogamous stitcher, one project at a time. I did the Celestial Dragon, and then I stitched a lot of, like some Clouds Factory and some Frosted Pumpkin. And then I started watching Flosstube, and I was like, wait a minute, you can have more than one project at a time. And it was all downhill from there. And, you know, then I started making the Flosstube videos, and I distinctly remember saying in one of my first videos, samplers, man, I don't get them. I don't like them. I'll never stitch one. And
how'd that go?
Boy, have I taken that back 100 times over. now I love them. I buy them. I stitch them. I buy antique ones. I reproduced one. Like, I'm all in.
Yeah.
For samplers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
What
this
was
floss
that?
Tube has been
what
great.
Was that early? Those early floss tubes. You know, you see people do their first one, and they're really nervous. Was that one of those where you were half freaked out doing it?
Oh, three quarters at least.
Okay.
Three quarters freaked out at least. you know, it stinks because I get a lot of messages now. I want to make a floss tube, but I don't know what to like, how to do it, and whatever. And I always tell people, like, go to your favorite floss tuber, go back and watch their first episode.
There you go.
Because none of us knew how to do it. And you know what? It doesn't matter because we're all just mostly here for the stitching, right? And
right.
Then if you're excited about stitching and I'm excited about stitching, I'm excited to watch you talk about stitching.
Yeah.
And it gets better. So you get more comfortable. But I was three quarters freaked out. But it came pretty natural to me. I'm a talker. So
yeah.
If you couldn't tell.
Yeah, no, but you have that kind of ability to just sit down in front of a camera and go.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, that just doesn't come naturally. And,
yeah.
But it's fun when people start to see that first one and they just don't know what to do. And of course, I'm sure as you get down the road, you think back. Wait, I was just talking to a piece of equipment.
Yeah, I do that. I'll film my video and then I sit down and I edit my video. So I talk through, like, some of my floss tubes are an hour. I've been trying to keep them to 30 minutes lately because there's a lot of floss tube to watch. But some of my floss tubes are an hour. So I sit down and I film it and then I sit down and I edit it. And that takes, you know, twice as long as the filming. And I just sit here and I think, like, I just spent 4 hours with myself locked in a room on a Saturday morning, just listening to myself talk. And it's weird, right? It's a strange concept.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for people to be nervous, you're talking into a microphone, you're talking at a computer. No one's seen it. No one has to see it.
And that's true too, right? Is like, if you film it and you hate it, just don't upload it. It's okay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, there's nobody making you do that.
No. Yeah. But I would encourage people, like, if you film it, just upload it. Because somebody's going to watch it and somebody's going to resonate with you. And, you know, I've met some of my very, very best friends in this whole wide world through FlossTube.
Right.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Because it's the one thing. Well, Arlene and I have talked about this many times that community that has formed around that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think people look at that as a whole bunch of people who make videos.
Yeah.
And at that level, who cares?
Right.
But that has nothing to do with it. It's that it's the community that has developed around that. But even more so, it's the energy it has put into cross-stitch in particular.
Oh, absolutely.
That is almost unbelievable because, I mean, cross-stitch right now is absolutely flying. And I would say that a majority of the reason why is that FlossTube community.
I think so, too. FlossTube and Instagram, I think, you know, when anything goes into social media, especially FlossTube, because we can actually see each other's faces and it's almost like you're reacting in real time, like, sometimes, you know, when I listen to you and Vaughn or I listen to you and Arlene, I'm having a cup of coffee and I'm stitching. And it's almost like we're sitting at a table together, like somewhere having coffee together and stitching together. You all just can't hear me. I'm talking to you, but you never talk to me. I don't hold it against you, Gary, but you guys never talk back. But that's how it feels. And I think because cross-stitch, it's not a team sport necessarily.
Right.
It can feel like we're the only ones cross-stitching. And then you stumble on all these people. You know, there's over 500 floss tubers easily, 550. All these people doing the same thing that you're doing, they're just not in your town, but now you know they're out there.
Right.
I think that's the magic of it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And it feeds off of of each other. 'Cause for me, one of the neat things is you get to see what people in other parts of the country and in many cases other parts of the world are stitching, and it opens up doors that you didn't even know were there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You find new designers and, you know, somebody goes to their shop and they crawl around under the tables 'cause that's where all the good stuff is. Teresa Vinette, Kitten Stitcher, is famous for that. She will crawl under tables at LNS's to find the good stuff because she knows that's where it is. But they'll crawl under the tables or like go into the clearance room and find something amazing, and suddenly everybody has to have it.
Right.
And it's out there. It's out there, but the shops have just kind of put it away because nobody was interested before. And then I think how thankful I am that we can help shops like that, right? Like clear out your old inventory, give you space to have new inventory, you know, keep you buying things so you can sell them to me.
Well, and I've had more than one designer say that the impact of FlossTube is all of a sudden they'll start getting orders for a chart long ago forgotten.
Right.
You know, what is this? You know, where did this come from? And then they'll discover someone showed it on a FlossTube and, you know, several people want it. And so, yeah, that's great in its own regard because it revives some of those charts. And
absolutely. Yeah. And I'm glad that designers feel that too, because I feel like if you know and you love FlossTube and you understand it, you know, right, the impact that it has.
Yeah.
But maybe like if you're not necessarily in that world yet or it hasn't come onto your radar, then you don't really know like the great things that are happening with cross-stitch. And I would hate for shops or designers to get discouraged. So I love it when they see a bump like that and then when they can say like, hey, what's going on?
Right.
And then I feel like we bring them into the FlossTube fold, you know, like suddenly they know. And it's like a big giant hug. It's like a big giant group hug. Like, welcome to FlossTube. We're going to just get ready to print a lot of this chart because we're all going to want it in about 3 days.
Right.
So
I
love that. The FlossTube effect, if you will.
Oh, yeah. It's very real. Very real.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
I wish there was a way to track it. That would be fun
to
like track it.
Yeah, well, I agree to quantify it would be interesting, but I think that the activity and the shops and the online activity, but even Nashville the Nashville market is a look at all of the new designers.
Oh, there were so many of us.
You know, and look that's a dynamic that is really emerging, and for me is for me. Why is it just for me? For all of us. I don't know. Sometimes things just come out of my mouth that make no sense.
You're speaking it's okay. Speak for all of us, Gary. I'm with you.
But you look at needlework, and in many aspects, needlework is an aging activity, art, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think FlossTube has been a major player in young people getting involved, and not just young people stitching, but then the design aspect. And so we're getting a new lift from younger people with different views that gives some future to the hobby, but also I think has driven some of the more established designers to step up a little bit.
Oh, I hadn't really considered it. I mean, I see the infusion. But I hadn't really considered what it's doing to the more established designers, but I mean, maybe you're right. Like they've felt, and hopefully they haven't felt challenged in any way. Hopefully it's just more of an inspiration, right? Because competition.
Not that at all. No, not challenged. Like they're going to put me out of business,
but spurred on and like, hey, people want this. Like maybe a reinfusion of energy into the system.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's amazing. Yeah. I love it. Every time a designer closes up shop or retires, I just cringe because we're losing what that person had to offer.
Right.
You know, but with the new ones, you know, I'm equal opportunity. I love to support everybody. So, you know.
Yeah. But there was.
I just like to buy things.
Yeah. Well, there. Okay. Put it in the most base terms, Michelle.
Let's be honest. I'm a collector.
Yeah, you can cloak it in whatever you want. You just like to buy things, yeah.
I do. I'll spin it every which way, but bottom line, I like stuff.
But there were a lot of new shops.
Yeah. I forget the numbers, but they told us because, you know, market was amazing. I got to go to the wholesaler meeting. They have a meeting for the wholesalers and then a meeting for the retailers where we kind of give feedback and talk about things, and everything was a bit of a blur. But I remember them saying that like for the vendors, there were 43 new vendors this year. So designers and suppliers.
Right.
And then there was, I forget how many new shops, but there were over 300 shops signed up for Market this year, brick and mortar and online shops. And that, to me, that's so exciting, because if the shops aren't at Market to buy things for their customers, then why are the vendors? We don't have to go to Market if the shops don't go.
Right.
And man, do those shops work hard.
Yeah,
man,
they do.
Man, do they work hard.
Yeah.
I'm in awe of them. They just, thank you, shops. That's all I have to say. Like, thank you to all of them. They're amazing. And you and Fauna, too. You guys.
You have to. Oh, well, yeah. That's fun
you
for
did.
Us. But you have to see the shop owners working at that Market
to
really appreciate.
Yeah.
What they do, because you know, they're showing up with pre-orders, but then they're also looking for what can they add to their shop that's new, fresh, whatever.
Right.
And what is it, just a few, if you hit everybody in the time allotted, you just a few minutes with each one, so you really have to hustle.
You have to hustle, and you have to, and I saw a lot of divide and conquer.
Yes.
Where, like, you know, the shops, and we affectionate, I think everyone affectionately calls the shop helpers, they call them Sherpas. affectionately, I think that's a great, I would be honored to be a Sherpa. But I saw a lot of divide and conquer, like the shop owner would come in, they would pick out a few things, and then they would pay, and they would say, okay, can you hold that? My shop helper will be in to pick it up.
Right.
And I thought that was a good idea, because then, you know, the shop owner who's making the decisions and writing the checks, as it were, isn't, you know, weighed down literally.
Right.
By the amount of, because that paper is heavy.
Yes.
Paper gets heavy. So
yeah.
It was,
and I love all the hauling devices, the collapsible wagons and the.
Oh man. Everything from, you know, I don't think I actually saw, what are the little red wagons? Is that
radio
flyer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I actually saw an actual radio flyer, but in that vein to, you know, people whose husbands came to,
yeah.
And the husbands would just hang out in the hotel room, and they would get a text like, come to room 329, pick up my bags. They would come down, they would pick up the bags, and then the shop owner would be free to go amass more goodies for their,
yep,
for their patrons. So,
oh,
so
yeah,
many great systems.
Yeah, no, I saw more than one husband doing
yes,
the clothing store sit on a bench, you know,
yes,
where all of us husbands have done that. You know, I got to try on these dresses. Just sit over here. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Oh, geez,
yeah,
shoot me.
Yeah, we know that look on your.
Yep.
I saw a couple of those faces. Yeah.
Yeah.
But very amazing forbearance. And, you know, thank you to the husbands for supporting, because you know, the shop owners couldn't buy as much if they didn't have somebody to take
right,
it back up to the room for them. So appreciate those guys too.
Yeah.
Was,
so,
you know,
take me through the design process for you. So you have floss tube, you start stitching more things, you realize you can do more than one at a time. It's allowed. How does designing start to enter into that? Do you start, is it a progression where you start to modify designs that you're stitching that others have put together, and then you start to see where you might put something together? How does that start to evolve?
Yeah, so I've always been a changer of colors, because I'm, although I do like to buy things, I'm very frugal. I try to be very frugal. So what I don't like to do, and I've never liked to do, and this is I'm a terrible person because of it, is I don't like to buy all the called for flosses.
Mm.
I like to be in floss clubs. I was in Victorian Motto Floss Club for a while. I was in Color and Cotton. So I have all these beautiful flosses that aren't necessarily called for in charts.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it started with subbing those flosses in. And at first it was just like a equivalent substitution, right? Like if I needed a pink, I would go find a pink in my Victorian Motto and I would sub in the closest to the called for.
Yeah.
And then I stitched Dear Joy from Barbara Anna. And she's called for, it's a deer wearing a dress, and she's called for in like blues and pinks and yellows. And I converted her to purples and silvers and like cold browns. And I thought like, oh, I love picking colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did that commission and I kind of smushed together a couple of charts that were already out there and changed some things, and I designed a dog and a tricycle for it. It was very tailored to the person.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought like, oh, you know, this is really fun, like making up my own thing and then actually stitching something that I designed. Amazing.
Right.
And then I I was a subscriber to X Stitch magazine, mm-hmm. Which is the, you know, X Stitch magazine, the yes. UK publication. And I became a patron of X Stitch magazine, and the level that I was a patron. So I pay Jamie every month a certain amount of money. And for that amount of money, my prize is I get a quarter of the page in the magazine to do whatever I like. And I thought, well, let me just throw a design in there and see what happens. Cause he has to put it in, like, zero risk for me. And I tell Jamie all the time, I'm like, are you ready for the design that I'm making you publish in your magazine that I'm paying you to publish? And he's like, sure, whatever, send it to me. he's very kind. He's very supportive. But, so my first one was actually in X Stitch magazine, and it was kind of zero risk because I didn't have a lot of overhead to put it out there. Jamie put it in the magazine because I made him, basically.
Right.
And no shame there. I would do that again in a heartbeat. But I also kind of thought, like, I have ideas and I think they're good and I like them and other people might like them. And if nobody likes them, then it's okay.
Right.
I'll keep stitching. There's so much stuff out there to stitch that if my designing journey fails, I won't run out of things to stitch. It'll be okay.
Right.
So I kind of just said, you know, why the heck not? And it's amazing because the more you do it, the more ideas you get. Mm-hmm. And I think it perpetuates itself. So it started with X Stitch magazine, and then I released a couple designs on my own, and then I went to Nashville. Like, I know I feel like that's not a normal progression, but.
Well, you know, everyone has their own path. That's a cool thing that he does, though.
It's amazing. It's such a cool idea.
Because good, bad, or indifferent, it gives you a chance to have some visibility. And
yep.
If there's no interest, well, that tells you something. And if, you
right.
Know.
Right. And it was nice because as soon as that first magazine came out, because my first design, I only get a quarter of a page. So the designs I put in there are like 30 by 30. They're very small, which was a nice starting point because it was easy to design something like little and simple. It didn't take me days to design it. But as soon as the magazine came out, I saw somebody posted that they had stitched my design, and they were like, this is fantastic. It took me 3 hours to stitch, and it's so cute. And I was like, huh, look at that. Somebody stitched it. And that's literally all I needed, Gary, was one person stitching my design.
Yep. I'm good to go. Yep.
I'm off to the races. It just takes a very tiny bit of encouragement to keep me running. So,
Well, it gives you, even if it's a sample of one, it gives you some validation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Everybody didn't throw up when they saw it. So,
Nobody burned their magazine that I know of. So I think we're okay.
Yeah. So that kind of got you going because now you've been doing designs for a year.
So I,
maybe not.
Originally, I thought I had started in July, but I looked back and that first design went into X Stitch magazine in March of last year. So it's been almost exactly 1 year, but, just very, very short amount of time. And then just, you know, I'm lucky in that I've made a lot of connections through FlossTube and Instagram. So I had designers that I could reach out to, Janine McGowan being my number one, the blue flower. She is an absolute angel. There's not enough kind things to say about her. There just aren't. But she was nice enough to say, hey, I have a corner room at Market. Do you want to go with me? And I was like, oh yeah, that didn't occur to me, but let's do it. Cause I'm a 2 foot in kind of person. Like I don't really look and see how deep the pool is. I'm just jumping in and it'll be fine. It'll be fine. So that's kind of how that happened. Janine she's my cross-stitch guru, I call her, and she cringes every time I say that, but it's true. It's true.
Hey, I like her work, I'll tell you.
Oh, she is a genius, isn't she? Yeah. Huckleberry Farm?
Yep.
Oh, I sat at Market all weekend. I sat 6 feet away from that thing, staring at it, just in absolute despair that Marilyn with Picture This Plus wasn't at Market, so I couldn't go get my piece of shale and start on it. it's so beautiful.
Well, and that's one of those designs where, you know, for me, the ground cloth it's an element, sometimes somewhat significant, but for me, I just want it to go away visually.
Right.
And that's one where that ground cloth is an integral part, at least for me, an integral part of that design and of that sampler. And for me, just really makes it go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely agree. And I consider myself a bit of an expert on Huckleberry Farm since I spent so much time with it in the same room with it. I love it. And I'm the queen, like I said before, of stitch from stash, right? I tend not to kit things up with the called for stuff, but I feel like I would be doing Huckleberry Farm an absolute disservice to not stitch it exactly how Janine charted it.
Yep.
So I will be getting a piece of shale and I will be getting the called for flosses. You know, it's just so beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And that is one of those where I mentioned a couple times, probably more times than I should have, about what I'm seeing with original samplers.
Mm-hmm.
I think there seems to be, certainly in the last year, some really impressive original samplers that if you gave me a really neat reproduction and original, I'd have a hard time deciding.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a couple of years ago, I'm not so sure that was the case. I mean, there just seems to me to be a lot of original sampler things that are coming out that are, you know, give me that. I want that.
Agreed. I feel like the reproductions have always been there, right? They're beautiful and, you know, the history behind them. But I think you're right. The originals have really stepped up in the last few years. And I think it goes back to what you said before, the infusion of energy around a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple people did original samplers and people are like, huh, you know, I have ideas for samplers. And now we're seeing all this great momentum.
Yeah.
In the original sampler arena. And I'll tell you, I am collecting them as fast as I can.
Well, it's to me, it's that next dimension. I'm always looking for what is the next dimension, because the reproduction samplers, I mean, they have the history. They have the history and everyone has a story, and you can go on the internet and you can look up about the little girl and all those things. And then
that's so cool.
You're reproducing something that's 100, 150 years old. I mean, that's neat in its own thing.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Yes.
But to have one of these, you know, like Janine's and Beth Twist, hers, Beth. I mean, there's so many of them that are just, I'll do that one. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I don't have to feel bad when I'm stitching it, because it wasn't like Janine. If it came out of Janine's mind or Beth Twist's mind, I don't have to compare myself to a 9-year-old girl when I'm stitching a sampler, right? Because like I was stitching just last night. I was stitching on Miss Marianne Bourne's 1791 from Hands Across the Sea, and I'm thinking like, how old was Miss Marianne when she stitched this? Probably, you know. I could look in the booklet, but probably like low double digits, right? 10, 12. Man, was she a better needleworker than I am.
Isn't that the sad truth? I'll tell you.
It's the truth. Hey, more power to those girls. I thank them for their samplers. And I think everybody who made the samplers live as long as they did and come into Nicola's hands so she could get them out to us. But, but you know, when I stitch on Janine's, at least I can think like, Janine's a grown woman. I know.
Right.
I mean, she's still a far superior needleworker to myself, but slightly more attainable.
Yes.
Yeah. I could be like Janine McGowan when I grow up. I can't be like Miss Marianne Bourne. She's got me beat.
Right. Yeah. All those girls have us beat. Yeah. 9,
they
10 years old. Yep. And yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man. Yeah. Hands
yeah.
down.
And we can't count enough to get one motif to stay intact.
Right?
So, I know.
I'm the queen of modifications too. Like I'm not picking that out. If it's one stitch off, I'm just not picking it out.
Right. And see, I am. I got to pick that thing out. It's just,
we are opposite schools on that.
Yeah.
I'm a fudger extraordinaire.
Hey, all different people do these things. Yeah.
Which is great, right? That is great. I'm fascinated by you all who I have a dear friend who, if she's, you know, one tiny stitch off, half of her project will come out. She'll fix it. And I'm like, no, man.
Yeah.
I can't do that. But I think it speaks to our personalities too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's no question about that. But
yeah.
I'm one of those half a stitch out and I'm backing up till I get it right. Yep.
Oh yeah, no, I'm so type B, Gary. It's I'm happily type B.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. You probably get through life a lot smoother than I do. I get worked up.
The chill is higher, I think, than type A's. But, you know, I probably get less stuff done. So trade on, trade off.
I don't have the chill part. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. The chill is essential.
Yeah. Tell me about, now it's been a while in your floss tube efforts, your charity work, because you first started that with the walk that you do every fall. But that has continued. That's got to be pretty rewarding effort.
Oh, it's amazing. It's one of my favorite things that I do in my life is the charity. And yeah, it started with, because my job, for 10 years, I was a hospice nurse. So, lots of Alzheimer's patients, right? Not to bring it down too low, but and just seeing the impact
Crash.
That Alzheimer's—I know, I know. I'm sorry, everybody. But just seeing the impact that Alzheimer's has on families, it made me want to do something, right? Other than just caring for families and patients with Alzheimer's, but like do something. So these walks were the perfect outlet. And I'm not exactly sure. I think it started with a live sale on my floss tube for Alzheimer's auctions, and that went so well, and then items came in, live sale for, like, you know, this is the price, buy it at this price, boom. But items came in, and donations come from everywhere, from designers, from shops, from just people, you know, who find a great thing in their stash and say, hey, I don't have money to donate, but let me send you this primitive needle chart with the linen and all of the overdyed flosses. And I thought, I don't want to just sell it for one price. I want to do an auction. So that first year for Alzheimer's, I raised money for 6 months, and we did close to $12,000 just through floss tube and Instagram, through the stitching community. And then I thought, well, this Alzheimer's thing is really important to me, but there are so many other causes out there that are near and dear to so many other people's hearts. And that's how the monthly things got started. And at first I wasn't sure, because the first one that I did after Alzheimer's was, it's a charity called Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, which is for infant loss and, you know, families who have stillbirths or lose children very young, and it helps support them. But then the stories started flooding in, emails, direct messages on Instagram, people who said, you know, I've never been able to talk about it before, but I lost a baby. And I was, Gary, that first month I was reading my messages on Instagram and I was crying every day. I was crying because people were so touched. And I thought, you know, this must go on. Like, this has to continue. If we can touch people like this and do good in the community. And it just hasn't slowed down at all. It's just picked up steam. Like, since that first auction, we've done 22. I added it up at the beginning of the year. And as of January of this year, $22,000 raised through my floss tube and Instagram for various charities.
That's amazing.
And it's just, it feels so good. And everybody wants to be a part of it. Just the support is unconditional. Yeah. And people are so kind when I'm slow at shipping. So that helps too.
It helps, yeah.
but I love doing it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's neat because you took the floss tube platform and put a new level to it. Yeah. Made it go do something rather than people just talking about needle and thread.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have no doubt that you have made a difference more than once through that effort. And if nothing else, just making people aware of different things is a big step. And I just think it's one of the neat things that you do, because it's taking needlework and saying, all right, we can do something with this. That's for the greater good. And
yeah, absolutely. You know. I think our community, and you see it, right, when you interact with people, our community is full of people who are just so kind and so big hearted, and we want to help. And I think that what my charity auctions do is kind of give people a channel, you know, because you don't necessarily, like, even I am super into charities and charitable giving. I don't set aside, like, okay, on the third Wednesday of every month, I'm going to send a check to donate to charity. I just don't set aside that time.
Yeah.
But by making it fun and doing the Instagram auctions, I'm giving people, like, hey, you get stuff, right? Which we all love stuff. We've established that. And you're helping out all of these charities. And I think it's the combination of the helping and the collecting that we cross stitchers and needleworkers love.
Right.
So
there's no doubt. It's still you know, a time commitment on your part, and you know, I mean, you have to, that goes with it, but the payoff is many fold greater. So worth it. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely worth it. Takes a lot of it takes a lot of time. Thank you for acknowledging that.
Well, it does. I mean,
I'm happy
just,
to give.
Yeah, you know, that stuff just doesn't happen out of the blue. I mean,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time, and it really does take a village, because every once in a while I run low on items, and I'll go through my stash and look for things. You know, like, this is a really fantastic thing that I've already kitted up, but I'm not going to stitch it. I'm not going to get to it. But then I'll put a call out on my FlossTube or on my Instagram, and more donations just pour in from everywhere. So it's never just me, and it never has been just me, and it never could be just me. It's always the whole community doing it together.
Yeah. What is wrong with us that we stitch it, kit up something, and then we're not, what is wrong?
Is that bad? Is that wrong?
I don't know if it is or not, but it sure is strange.
I mean, if it's wrong, I don't necessarily want to be right. I have, that's cliche, but Gary, I can't tell you how many things I have kitted up waiting for me. I don't want to tell you, in fact.
Yeah, no one ever wants to admit that, no. But you know, if you pull yourself out of the whole thing and you sit back and say, all right, there's and you know, put the dollars to it.
Oh yeah, don't do that.
You know, and extract yourself from the needlework fun, and say, all right, that collection of threads and cloth and chart right there, I bought. I'm never going to stitch that.
Yeah.
Ooh, man.
So that does hit me every once in a while when I'm like, and it hit me just before market, as a matter of fact, like, I have too much stuff. I have to get rid of some of this stuff. And I think it was because, you know, there were half folded charts all over my house, like piles and piles of paper to get ready for market. So I think that was contributing. But also, I did add it up once. I did an approximate, you know, calculation of how much money do I have in things that are in process? How much money do I have in things that are kitted? How much money do I have in charts? And it was an embarrassingly large amount. And a number that I will never share with my husband. No, he knows. He knows. I shouldn't imply that I hide things monetarily from him. He knows. But yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Do I have a lot of stuff?
Yeah.
You know, and you just spend it without thinking, like, Kathy Barrick, she was retiring some designs a few months ago, half a year ago, and so she was selling off models, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've had in my collection, speaking of original samplers, I've had Autumn on Lazy Bear Mountain in my stash to be stitched for a very long time, and of course it's Kathy Barrick, so it's called for in NPI silks and 40 count linen. Mm-hmm. And I've never kitted it up because I'm afraid of silks still a little bit.
Oh, geez.
And I'm afraid of the monetary, the output for the silks.
Yeah.
I love stitching the silks, but I don't like buying them. And so she put up Autumn on Lazy Bear Mountain on her Etsy shop, the original model. And I thought, huh. And so I bought it. I own it. It's mine. And now I don't have to stitch it.
Oh, that's how it works. Okay.
I just get to hang it on my wall. I mean, I won't claim it as my own. I'll say this is the original model. And then I was able to pass my chart on, too. So there's a tiny bit of altruism in that story.
You just have this all rationalized out, don't you?
Oh, Gary, I can rationalize anything. Anything when it comes to needlework.
Yeah, you just have it all mapped right out. I could do a little diagram right here.
You could. I will get you there. If you come to a sticking point, you shoot me a message. I will rationalize it for you.
All right.
No problem.
You on that list. I'll put you on a list of rationalization. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. People to call in need of an excuse.
Right.
That's me.
Right. No, there's an obvious skill there. So credit for that. Yeah.
Thank you. I'll take that. Mm-hmm. I'll take that compliment.
So, Nashville market inspired you. Are the designs starting to flow, gearing up for next year? Are you going to try and get a stream of these of designs going now in the coming year? What is your plan?
So my plan is to try to work ahead a little bit, because, you know, I haven't been hardly designing at all very long. And my usual process for designing is like, hurry up and design something. I'm lucky to have enough friends that are willing to be model stitchers that I can send it off to them. Yeah. So I can design the next thing while they're stitching it. And my designs tend to be small. So, you know, a week or two, maybe 3 weeks with the model stitcher, and they're back to me, and not a lot of pressure on my model stitchers. But then I get it back, I finish it, I take the picture, I send out the email, and it's like between the time I get the model back and the time I send out the email to shops, hey, I'm releasing this, is like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's apparently not the way you're supposed to do it. that's a very high pressure business model that I've put on myself.
I see.
So yeah, I came back from market with all these ideas, and I'm designing things happily now. I can say I'm designing things now that I'm hoping to put out next year at market. My fall designs are done. I need to do a couple Christmas things. My summer designs are done and with the model stitchers, and now I'm working on next year. So it's nice to, I feel like I can relax a little bit in my pace now that I've worked myself ahead. But you know, I'll get behind again because type B.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, so many ideas for next summer, and so many ideas for Halloween. I need more Halloween stuff. Yeah. Just market just the sheer number of people that you meet, and, cross-stitch royalty that you meet, you know, I embarrassed the heck out of myself in front of Gene Lee of the Attic. Luckily it came off. I heard it came off as endearing and not crazy, because it could have really gone either way. I just, you know, it's Gene Lee, Gary. It's Gene Lee. Like I was effervescent with my praise of her and my awe that she was in my room. And
you were gushing?
I was like gushing. It was Janine McGowan was laughing at me hard. She was laughing at me hard. But it's okay. It came out well. My charts are in the attic, so
okay.
it couldn't have gone too badly. So
yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, just meeting people in the industry is so inspiring, and it just makes me want to just do more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's great. Good for you. And working ahead, you know, look at you being all organized. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Don't get too attached to me being organized, because that's not my natural state. So
if I check back in like September, you'll be a train wreck?
I will be a scrambling mess. Okay.
I will be
driving
then.
The struggle bus. Yes. Check in with me. That'll be a fun follow-up.
Yeah, I'll give a call just to enjoy. Okay.
All right, Michelle. You can laugh at me. It's okay.
Thanks so much, Michelle. This has been a blast. Appreciate it.
Oh, Gary, thank you so much for having me on Fiber Talk. This is amazing.
Well, it was an enjoyable conversation. Learned a lot. And now go to that Fire Poppies and buy a Lowry stand, will you?
I think I'm going to call Susan.
Okay. Thanks for listening.